The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Donald Trump will return to the White House 4 years after losing the 2020 presidential election. He becomes only the second president to serve two non-consecutive terms. Now, over the course of the morning, we'll have reaction and analysis and all the latest results. We're going to start, though, with our chief reporter, Barry White, who's in Kamala Harris's home state of California. Barry, good morning.
Hi, Pat. Good morning.
The atmosphere in Berkeley yesterday was quite buoyant. I bet it's changed overnight.
Yeah, Pat, it was despondent. There was a few watch parties here organised in Berkeley. I went around a few last night, which is just a couple of hours ago, and there wasn't big crowds at them because they were all organised to start at 8 p.m. California time, which would be 4 a.m. Irish time. And already at this time, it wasn't looking good for Kamala Harris. The first watch party I went to was in a bookshop. There was basically nobody turned up. I then went to another one, which was in downtown Berkeley, that was getting underway at 8 o'clock. It was in a place called Spatz Bar. But as soon as it started, it became clear that it wasn't going to be Kamala Harris's night. Within the first hour, 20 states were declared as wins for Donald Trump. But along with this, he was also edging ahead in a number of the key swing states. So, as I say, it was becoming clear earlier on that it was not going to be a good night for Kamala Harris. And yeah, look, the place just soon started to empty. You know, a lot of despondent, disappointed people. The only cheer here was when California was declared as a win for Kamala Harris. But already at that stage, the place was already half empty. Most people had already left. So when California was declared, yeah, there was a slight cheer, but that was the only cause for celebration here. And as people were leaving, yeah, nobody really wanted to speak, and most people were just, they don't have good words to say about Donald Trump here. There's people comparing him to Hitler. There's people calling him a fascist. People telling me that it's going to be bad for America. And other people, Pat, funny, are saying that they think that the Republican Party used Berkeley as an example, as a stick to beat. The Republican Party used Berkeley as a stick to beat with. You know, Berkeley seen as a very liberal place, a very liberal city, one of the most liberal cities in America. And, you know, the Republicans are saying, if you vote Democrat, you're going to end up with a place like Berkeley, or you're going to end up with a state like California. So they've kind of been using this as an example. But
And Barry, just to explain to our listeners, what is supposed to be so scary about living or being a place like Berkeley?
I suppose it was quite an eye-opener for me here, Pat, being here since Sunday. Look, there's some very nice parts of Berkeley. North Berkeley is very nice. Up around the university campus is nice. But downtown Berkeley here in my hotel is, like, I'll give you an example. When I left this watch party just after 10 p.m. tonight, it was a 15-minute walk to my hotel. And I have to walk past a number of tent cities where there's homeless people living. I walk past dozens of homeless people on the streets. There's obviously a huge drug problem here. I think fentanyl is a huge issue. And just seeing that is quite an eye-opener. There's obviously a big rich-poor divide as well. So the Republicans are kind of pointing at the likes of Berkeley and saying, you know, if you want your cities across the United States to be like Berkeley, vote Democrat. And that's what people are saying. But yeah, it was an eye-opener for me because there's obviously a big rich-poor divide here. It's actually pretty sad to see. And I haven't been to America that many times, but you know, the only place I'd ever been before here was Washington, and Washington is completely different to this. But yeah, just there's a lot of poverty, a lot of homelessness is a huge issue here, and there's obviously a huge drug problem here as well. And I'm told that San Francisco is very similar, LA is very similar as well.
Now, what are the people who obviously are Democrats, because the state voted hugely a Democrat, what are they saying then about their own party and why so many working people seem to have deserted them?
It's hard to know, Pat, but like if you're looking at California, Kamala Harris still won here by double digits. She won by 22 points, but Joe Biden won by 29 points in 2020. So the Democratic vote is well down in California. And like I was looking at the polls yesterday, the Latino vote's down and the Asian vote was down here in California. And that's been replicated across the United States. Donald Trump has seemed to have been able to tap in to that vote. And we've got a lot of that Asian vote and Latino voters voted for Donald Trump. Obviously, there's a lot of black voters have come out as well. So he seemed to be able to tap into something. I don't know, you know, there's so many things he said. He's going to, you know, take away taxes on tips and stuff like that. I don't know if that's what people are looking at, but I just think there's a lot of people in America want to change. And there's only really two choices here. So if you're not going to vote for the Democrats, you have to vote Republican. So I think it's just kind of maybe it's the that's the only choice that people had.
All right, Barry, reporting from a despondent California in the middle of the night. Maybe when dawn breaks, they might feel a little bit more optimistic about their future. All right, Barry, thanks very much for joining us. Well, now we're going to go to Josh Crosby. Josh, exactly where are you at the moment?
Well, I'm outside the convention center in West Palm Beach, Pat. And this is where Donald Trump would have been holding his watch party and where he made his speech declaring a victory. And definitely a different mood here in the air than where Barry is. It's just gone 4 a.m., but the atmosphere here that's been lingering all night, like in the past 2 hours, there have been thousands of people on the street making their way from the convention center, and their fans are there. They're waving their flags in the air. The cars are revving up and beeping. There's police everywhere. They've barricaded off the streets to try to control the crowds. And Trump fans have come from all over to be here tonight, Pat. Like, we'll hear from one man who traveled from Melbourne to be here. I met a man who came from the Philippines, another guy from Norway. And look, it is historic, Pat. And those here are going to be soaking it up. Let's take a listen now to Jimmy Holderfield and his wife, Pam. Jimmy tells me about the outfit he's wearing and why they voted for Trump.
Well, I'm showing that I'm a garbage man. I pick up trash. I'm a retired policeman, and I'm also secretary of the National Police Union. So I'm here to support our president, Donald Trump.
We have to get back to a man that will get up in the morning and pray over his cereal for our country and our children. I have a granddaughter that I don't want to have to worry about my little 8-year-old going in a restroom with a grown man coming in there. So I pray that this election goes the way.
Have you been praying?
Oh, every day. And all my friends, I have a prayer chain going.
And our police officers will restore law and order in the United States. That's what we do.
A prayer chain for the election.
For President Trump, to begin with, for his safety, for his leadership, and for him. We reach out to all of our friends that we know are faith Christians that believe in Jesus.
And we all pray together.
And we all just say, send a prayer chain out. So they reach out, like if I have 30 people, then they reach out to 30 people. And the next thing you know, there's millions of people that have been touched by somebody praying for this man and our country.
This is the craziest election in our lifetimes, probably will be, and I thought there'd be no better place than to be here in Trump City, Trump County, bringing home 2024. The purpose was to be here on election day, yes sir. Yeah.
And as an Australian, what is it that you feel so passionate about Trump about? Why do you feel so passionate about Trump?
I think so. I'll say that I have nothing against Kamala Harris and the Democrats, but I just feel like it's a very volatile world at the moment. We need stability, we need order, we need structure, we need someone that will actually lead it rather than trying to appease the left and appease people just to play party politics. We need a leader that thinks for himself and does things, and I think Donald Trump represents that.
So you've no vote, you've no skin in the game, if you like, but you still want to be here for the atmosphere.
Exactly. I think definitely for the vibes and just to feel it, to be with the people, to bring it home. Like I said, it's history. Where you, everyone around the world that are here, are witnessing history. This is the most craziest election. I'm riding the red waves, baby. It's like a party. It's a celebration. I'll be drinking every single beer from every place in Florida, baby.
Some Trump supporters outside where he gave his speech overnight. So, Josh, what happens next?
Well, all around me, Pat, I keep hearing chants of we did it and the future is bright. So it's the confidence and the way this win will be taken now by the MAGA movement as we move forward from today. That'll be the one to watch, because the number one criticism that I kept hearing over the past few days here in Florida is that they don't trust the voting system. So now that it has shown in their favor, the success of their man, how will their views on the system change? Then you had the richest man in the world, Elon Musk. He posted on his platform X a picture of himself, Trump, and the UFC's Dana White with the caption, "The future is lit." So who knows? What are they planning, or who will be making up the next US government roles? But in the short term, Pat, it's party mode here in Palm Beach, Florida. It's a Wednesday morning, so some people have said to me that they have to go home for work in the morning. But then the younger crowd, they're celebrating around the streets. And Pat, we hear so much about the demographics when it comes to US politics, the way it's analyzed and divided up. But here in Florida, at the exit polls, more than 80% of the black vote were for Democrats. But among the crowds here at the venue tonight, outside the convention center, I spotted the Blacks for Trump group. Now, they're loud and proud when it comes to their support for the Republican Party. And its spokesman, Maurice Simonet, says Trump has shown his community more support than any other candidate.
Blacks for Trump.
Blacks for Trump.
Yes.
Why, what's Trump doing for your community?
He's doing everything. He's giving us a $500 billion platinum plan. I don't see Biden or Harris offering nothing.
And even with
suffering and high taxes and gay stuff. You know.
Did you vote for Barack Obama?
No way.
No way. No.
I hate Barack Obama with a passion.
Like, do you not want to see a black person in the White House?
No, if they were righteous, if you had somebody like Ben Carson and Trump was backing him, I would back him all the way because I know he does righteous stuff. It's not about your skin color. It's about whether you're going to do the right thing. If you're a wicked black or white, I don't like you. I don't like Biden. He's white. Trump is white. I hate Biden. I love Trump. See the difference?
Were you Republican all along or just since Trump came on the scene?
I've been a Republican for a while. I helped George H. I helped George W. I helped all of the Republicans run for office all the way up until today.
And is it difficult sometimes in your community to say that you're a Trump fan? Do you get any grief from
Phil? No. I throw parties every week with about 1,000 people.
About 1,000 people. Some of the texts coming in, and there are quite a few. Is that guy you had on a parody? It really shows American voters were stuck between a rock and a hard place. Where are all the great American statesmen gone? It's amazing what happens when you purposely undereducate a whole continent. Well, I'm joined now in studio by Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with the Journal.ie. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
You look a bit despondent yourself.
Yeah, look, not the result, speaking frankly, that I would have wanted. But that having been said, I have to respect the verdict of the people and have to look at the reasons why Kamala Harris was defeated. And I think an awful big part of it is down to Trump having the two biggest issues on his side in the campaign, which were inflation and immigration.
Yeah. Now, there's a misunderstanding about inflation. Once prices inflate, they rarely go back. So even though you sort out inflation, you stop the increases, but they stay plateaued at where they rose to.
That's absolutely true. But the issue here is the perception. And the perception in the United States was that things had gone way up under Biden and Harris, that they are to blame for it. People can see just how expensive everything is. You compound that with the immigration issue and the presentations at the southern border and the perception that they are overrunning the United States. You take all that and add to it the fact that Harris didn't come on the scene until very late. Speaking frankly, she was not the best candidate the Democrats had to offer.
And you've been saying that all along.
All along, yeah. And
now, the problem, you got to point the finger a bit at Joe Biden. He was supposed to be a one-term president, a transitionary figure, but he decided he wanted more.
I do. I think Biden owed it to his party. I think he owed it to his country to step aside well before the debate when his decline was manifest. And what I would say is if he had done so, his historical legacy would be cemented. And I would argue with very strongly that were somebody like Gretchen Whitmer or Gavin Newsom the nominee, we might have a different election result here. But I will say a couple of things I think are important to say. This was not a defeat of the Democratic Party due to, the Arab Americans in Michigan or the racist comments made by somebody, a comedian. It wasn't down to those sort of instances. This was, in my view, a wholesale repudiation of this Democratic ticket and indeed in many ways of the Democratic Party and where it is right now.
And what are the specific aspects of the Democratic Party that people were rejecting?
Well, you look at the group that has been trending towards the Republicans, the fastest growing voter group in the United States are Latinos. And they had been trending Republican for some time. But if you look at the exit polling yesterday as to how they voted, it is quite simply extraordinary.
I have the numbers here in front of me. Latino men, 53% for Harris, 45% for Trump. Latino women, 59% for Harris, 40% for Trump.
Yeah, and this is down to, again, I think the issues I mentioned already are present in that, immigration and inflation. Immigration, albeit ironic, but if inflation is there. But there's more to it than that. There is a sense, I think, very strongly felt by the white working class, but now by Latinos as well, that the Democratic Party has moved too far to the left, in particular on cultural issues and on the culture wars. And I think an awful lot of people voted on those things because the Republicans did a good job of painting Kamala Harris as an out-of-touch California ultra-liberal who's totally out of step with middle America. And Democrats, you know, again, the abortion issue worked for Democrats, but at the same time, Democrats have almost done their damnedest to repel people of faith, to repel people for whom their religious faith is a guide in how they see politics. And of course, Democrats are never going to be on the right on cultural issues. But instead, they've made themselves see, you know, you're not welcome here.
Are you saying you're too woke?
Well, I don't use that word, but I would say too elitist. I would say too guided in their thinking, too guided in their disposition by the demands of donors who live on the coast, for whom cultural issues are a big priority, whereas the priority of the Democratic Party, when it's at its best, is always the concerns of people who work for a living and live paycheck
to paycheck. Okay, and here is the rub for the Democrats. But if you look at white men, 24% for Harris. 74% for Trump. White women, 31% for Harris, 69% for Trump. Now, these are based on exit polls. Mm-hmm. It may not be exact. Black men, 81% for Harris, 16% for Trump. So the great migration of black men to Trump, there is an improvement for Trump there, but it's not a huge migration. Black women, 90% for Harris, 8% for Trump.
No, yeah, I mean, certainly black males didn't migrate the same. I noticed, according to some exit polling data, that black males didn't turn out in the numbers they do. I wonder if that, you know, that also had a pernicious impact on the Harris-Walz team. But look, if this doesn't cause the Democratic Party to do some soul searching, you look at those numbers, why is it that Democrats have lost complete touch with the white working class? Why is it the white working class people are more likely to be Republicans now? There's been a realignment in American politics that you and I have discussed before. That realignment and that funny coalition, that odd Trump coalition, actually works for the Republican Party. The Democratic Party has been disadvantaged by the moves it has made, I would argue, at the behest of its donors.
It would suggest, though, that the Republican voters, or many of them, were more sophisticated than they were given credit for. In other words, they know he's a disgusting, reprehensible man, but they can separate the man from the policies.
Yeah, I think, we talk a lot about the people who go to the rallies and the adherents and the people who say crazy stuff down at Mar-a-Lago. We overlook what I regard as the vast majority of Trump voters who are transactional. And whether that is on tax policy, whether it's on social issues, a whole host of different things, they vote for Trump for reasons that they perceive are good for them.
I'll read out some of the texts here. There's one simple takeaway from this election. Electorates have had enough of wokeness. Kamala Harris famously said, "We should all be more woke, not less woke. The Democratic Party is a shadow of what it once was. It's now a far-left woke echo chamber. The Democrats need to come back to the center." Another one. Speaking to friends in the US, there's the perception that the Democratic Party is the party of the wealthy, woke elites and has long abandoned the blue-collar electorate. I'm hugely apprehensive of Trump's presidency, particularly for Ireland, but let's be frank, the Democrats blew it. That's from Jack in Terenure. Now, another element that I'm wondering, and maybe you can throw some light on this, was there an element of misogyny that largely America was not ready for a female president, and particularly a female president of color?
I'm not sure. I think at the fringes there was an element of that. And I think that one of the things I think is really unfortunate, and this is, and again, I speak as somebody who's been critical of Kamala Harris, her ally in CNN, Van Jones, I think he put it best when he said, "Trump gets to be lawless. She has to be flawless."
Now, you mentioned Van Jones, and I want to play his reaction to the prospect earlier before it was absolutely confirmed that Donald Trump would win.
And I do see it differently because I'm thinking about the people who are not a part of anybody's elite who are hurting tonight. There are African-American women who know a little bit about being talked down to and know a little bit about having their economic dreams crushed, who try to dream a big dream over the past couple of months. And tonight they're trading in a lot of hope for a lot of hurt. And they were hoping that maybe this time, one of their own could be seen as worthy. And once again, they're facing rejection. And that hurts. They thought tomorrow morning they're going to walk out with their shoulders back a little bit, maybe able to breathe for the first time and feel like they belong someplace. They did everything that they knew how to do. And it's going to be harder than it should be tomorrow for them to hold their heads up. And they're not the only people who are hurting tonight. If you're a trans, if you're a parent of a trans kid, your child's face was used as a springboard to power for somebody. That doesn't feel good. There are going to be people tomorrow. We're going to be handing clothes at the dry cleaners to people who don't have papers. There are going to be people who are going to be cleaning your teeth tomorrow who don't have papers. And they're terrified tonight. And so it's easy to blow this off. Oh, look at the elites. They're going to get their comeuppance. It's not the elite that's going to pay the price. It's people who woke up this morning with a dream and are going to bed with a nightmare. And those people didn't deserve to be respected and held and talked to. Those are the people who are going to pay the price for whatever Donald Trump decides to do.
A compassionate and eloquent statement of where we are, but I think it almost strengthens my point. The Democratic Party owes it to those vulnerable people to assemble coalitions that are broad enough in an American system where there are only two parties de facto to win elections, because those are the constituencies that they have to look after. They've always fought for. That's a laudable aim. But you can't get things over the line unless you assemble a diverse, broad range of people and interests in a two-party system. And Democrats used to be good at that. They're not good at it anymore. And the reality is the Republicans, who are always terrible at that, have improved dramatically on that front. And that's why we're seeing results like we saw last night.
Now, the cabinet that Donald Trump will assemble, I mean, I mentioned in my very introduction to the program this morning about the focus on J.D. Vance, because Trump undoubtedly is frail physically and perhaps mentally. Undoubtedly. In the next 4 years, that may come to deliver us a President Vance or a vice president that's effectively acting as president. And then you've got Elon Musk strutting his stuff in Mar-a-Lago last evening. And you've got R.F. Kennedy, who will, if he has any say in health matters, will do away with vaccines.
Yeah, it's some very dangerous characters that Trump has chosen to identify himself with. Musk is a serious oddball and afflicted with the same megalomania that Donald Trump, I believe, is affected with. That is a worry. And when you have Donald Trump saying, you know, Bobby Kennedy Jr. is going to make America healthy again, and you look at some of the things that he believes, that's very, very frightening. And then you do mention J.D. Vance, you know, who is a very capable, very articulate, very smart guy. But he certainly believes a lot of hard right things.
Does he? Because he flipped. I mean, he dismissed Trump originally and then he became his greatest fan. And the question is, was that all about getting close to power?
Oh, I think it's about getting close to power. But I do believe that J.D. Vance does believe that stuff. He might have put it to one side, but I do believe in his core, he believes that stuff. Donald Trump, in my view, only believes in two things. Number one is himself. Number two, the core animating principle for him has been that the United States gets screwed on the global stage, not just by its enemies, but by its allies. So look, a Trump presidency poses all sorts of threats of a domestic nature, but also because of that one animating belief about the U.S. vis-a-vis the rest of the world. It's also dangerous for the world. It's dangerous for Europe. It's dangerous for Ireland.
Does he not see, you know, the greatest enemy of the United States at the moment and going forward over the next couple of decades is going to be China. And China is not pulling back its international tentacles. In fact, it's making them more strong.
No. This is what Trump does, and this is Trump's. This is where, you know, we can like it or not, but this is where Trump plays these things quite well, in the sense that, yes, the experts and yes, the people who know what they're doing, the adults in the room, so to speak, they have certain foreign policy ideas and theories about how we should proceed. In recent American history, that hasn't always worked out so well, not because they're wrong, but because the world is tough and the challenges are tough. Trump's reaction to that, however, is to go the complete opposite way and propose what really is nonsense, but it gets the approval of a lot of people who said, look, we followed the experts and look where it got us.
Yeah. Some of the comments coming in, let's see him finish the war in Ukraine in one day. Now, God help the people of Ukraine. Have you any data on total turnout? Was the win because more voted for Trump, or was it because the Democratic vote was suppressed?
I'd have to look at the numbers and crunch them a little bit better. I don't think that suppression would go as far to account for what is a pretty significant
Trump
win.
Trump taking maybe the popular vote, which, yes. you know, Clinton won the popular vote. Joe Biden comfortably won the popular vote. Kamala Harris might lose the popular vote, which loses her all the high ground.
Absolutely. And potentially we're looking at a situation where Donald Trump sweeps the battleground states. I believe that's still in the offing. And the other thing to mention, Pat, is down the ballot, Republicans had a good day in terms of the Senate elections, and arguably they're going to have control of the House as well. So
Supreme Court, House, Senate, and Trump. I mean, there is no control. No checks and balances at all.
Yeah, I mean, the only controls will be, I suppose the judges and the extent to which they have some fidelity to the law. And then, you know, within Congress, we knew when he was president first, there were Republicans who dared to challenge him from time to time.
They've been done away with.
Some of them are still around. Whether they're still strong enough to do so. The other thing I'd say is that because of the rules, the archaic rules of the United States Senate, where it takes 60 votes to get just about anything done, that also will be a break on some of his tendencies.
Racism and sexism runs deep in America. A female Indian African would never get elected by white middle America. The Democrats have become too pro-foreign wars when they used to be more anti-war. It's a huge turnaround. That's according to Peter and Skerries. We were talking in the program yesterday. It's not quite as simple as that. I mean, the mess in Afghanistan was created by Trump. He organized the pullout. He did the deal with the Taliban, and moving the embassy to Jerusalem, doing all those kind of things, negotiating or helping Saudi Arabia negotiate with Israel. You know, all of those things were the seeds of subsequent problems.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. But if you look at the Democrats and you look at Trump, I mean, arguably he has stole some of their clothes, both when it comes to the use of military force and when it comes to trades. Both of those issues used to unite people on the left. Now they've brought the white working class to Donald Trump.
All right. Anyway, we'll be continuing to analyze this throughout the program. Thank you very much, Larry, for joining us. So we will be talking to Terry Sheridan in New York later on and lots more.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.